Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring long-term digital citizenship and responsible participation in society. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
I'm really looking forward to getting into this one.
Me too. So to kick things off, I want you to imagine for a second, making a quick, maybe slightly off-colored joke, or, you know, just throwing out a completely unverified rumor while you're sitting in a quiet room with, like, two of your friends.
Okay. Pretty standard human behavior, right?
Right, exactly. But now imagine stepping outside that room and realizing your conversation was just broadcast on a massive billboard in the middle of Times Square.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And worse, it's going to stay illuminated on that billboard for the next 10 years. Fully searchable by your future employers, your colleagues, basically your entire community.
Yeah, that visual usually induces an immediate knot in the stomach. I mean, it's terrifying.
It really is.
But it actually accurately represents the fundamental disconnect of modern digital life. You know, from an evolutionary biology standpoint, our brains just haven't evolved to comprehend that level of permanent global scale.
Because we're used to, like, small groups.
Exactly. For hundreds of thousands of years, human communication was limited to the immediate physical village. You spoke, the sound waves dissipated, and, well, the consequences were localized.
And I guess the feedback was instantaneous too, right? Like if you acted out in the village square, you saw the physical reactions.
Yes.
You saw the crossed arms, the scowls, the, you know, the social fiction. You felt it right then and there.
Which naturally regulated behavior. But today, you are often sitting alone in a quiet room, tapping on a piece of glass. Your sensory environment is telling your brain, you know, you are alone, you are safe, this is temporary.
Right. Nobody is scowling at me through the phone screen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the digital reality is that you are standing on a global stage, interacting with permanent infrastructure.
Yeah.
So understanding digital citizenship really starts with recognizing that your digital footprint isn't a temporary diary.
Yeah.
It's an indelible public record of your judgment, your emotional regulation, and your overall reliability.
Man, that makes the long-term aspect incredibly daunting. We're essentially permanent residents of this massive, interconnected, global city, and we're sharing a civic infrastructure. But hold on. I actually have a major issue with this framing.
No, let's hear it.
Well, you're putting an enormous amount of the onus on the individual user, but aren't the platform algorithms quite literally designed to be toxic?
That is a very fair point.
Right, because we know that these billion-dollar tech companies engineer their feeds for maximum engagement, and honestly, human beings engage most predictably with outrage and tribalism.
We certainly do.
So why are we placing the blame on a young professional or a university student for leaving a reactive comment when they are up against supercomputers designed to provoke that exact reaction?
Yeah, that is really the pivotal tension of the modern internet. It is absolutely true that the underlying architecture of many platforms is optimized for engagement above all else.
It's just baked into the system.
It is. When we look at the mechanics of artificial intelligence and social media, the kind of algorithmic alignment issues explored in concepts of human-compatible AI, we see systems that test millions of variables to find the precise emotional trigger that keeps your eyes on the screen.
Which is usually anger.
Often, yes. So the algorithm is the accelerant.
Mm-hmm.
But individual human behavior is still the spark.
Ah, I see. So we're providing the raw material for the algorithm to amplify.
Exactly that. Think of a financial system. If a few people start a rumor that a bank is insolvent and everyone panics and withdraws their money at once, well, the bank actually collapses.
Right, a classic run on the bank.
Yeah. And the infrastructure of the internet relies entirely on a similar currency of collective trust. When you carelessly share a sensationalized headline without reading the article,
which we've all done.
Right, we all have. Or when you jump into a harassment campaign because it feels validating in the moment, you are actively degrading that collective trust. The algorithm might be a giant fan blowing air, but you are the one choosing to throw micropollutants into the wind.
Okay, I really see the distinction there. We can't control the fan, but we can completely control what we feed into it. Which brings us to the stakes of all this.
The stakes are huge.
If everyone acts as a micropolluter, the whole ecosystem collapses into misinformation and targeted harm. But if we choose to participate responsibly, we act as the filter. We build trust and inclusion and safety.
That's the ideal scenario, yes.
But, I mean, bridging the gap between knowing we should be responsible and actually doing it in a fast-paced environment seems nearly impossible. It's like verifying information before sharing is like checking the expiration date on milk before pouring it for your friends.
That's a great analogy.
You wouldn't serve them spoiled milk, so why serve them unverified information? But how do you practically build a reflex to check the date, so to speak, when the platform is screaming at you to act immediately?
To build that verification habit, we have to look really closely at our own cognitive biases. There is a psychological concept known as the urgency instinct. It's heavily discussed in frameworks of factfulness.
The urgency instinct, okay.
Yeah. When we are presented with information that triggers fear or outrage, our brain basically bypasses critical thinking and demands immediate action. And the platforms know this.
Of course they do.
They use UI design, you know, flashing notifications, trending bars, share counts, to manufacture a completely false sense of urgency.
They make you feel like if you don't share this outrage right now, you are somehow complicit.
Exactly. And that is the trap. The antidote to the urgency instinct is introducing intentional friction into your own life.
Intentional friction.
Yeah, ethical participation fundamentally requires slowing down. When you feel that sudden, massive spike in emotion, whether it's extreme anger at a political post or, honestly, extreme validation because an article confirms your exact worldview, the biological response should be your trigger to stop.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're replacing the share reflex with a pause reflex.
That pause is where digital citizenship actually happens. In that moment of friction, you ask the basic verification questions.
Like what?
Like, is this primary source material? Can I confirm this across multiple reputable outlets? Am I just reacting to a manipulated image? Taking accountability for what you distribute is the core of fairness online.
Let's take this out of the abstract and look at how this plays out in real life. There was this fascinating situation recently with a university student organization that completely unraveled, and it perfectly illustrates this dynamic.
Of the group chat scenario, yeah. It's incredibly common and highly instructive.
Yes. So imagine a student organization of about 200 people,
yeah,
and they're communicating primarily on a platform like Slack or Discord.
Very typical setup.
It started with one unverified rumor about how the organization's budget was being handled. And because of that urgency instinct we just talked about, a few members immediately blasted the rumor into the main channel.
And then the algorithm of human drama took over.
Totally took over. People formed factions, the language became entirely toxic, and the actual purpose of the organization basically ground to a halt.
What you were describing is a textbook example of toxic friction. It's a total breakdown of the digital ecosystem on a micro level.
But what's really interesting is how they fixed it.
Yeah.
They didn't just ban everyone or delete the server. They introduced two specific standards, a verification pause and respectful communication guidelines.
Simple but effective.
Right. If you wanted to make a claim about the organization, you had to link a verified primary source, like an official meeting minute or a budget spreadsheet. And they implemented a mandatory cooldown period for heated threads.
By establishing those standards, they essentially rewrote their civic infrastructure. And the transformation that follows is predictable, but profound. When you remove the toxic friction of infighting, paranoia, and false rumors, you make room for productive friction.
Productive friction meaning like healthy, rigorous debate about actual ideas.
Exactly. And the reason this university case study is so critical is that it is a perfect microcosm for the future workplace.
Oh, absolutely.
Because whether you're moving into corporate finance, healthcare, or engineering, you will be operating in a company Slack channel or a Microsoft Teams environment or some proprietary project management tool.
That's a really important connection to make. Your future boss isn't just looking for someone who knows how to use Excel or write code.
No, they're looking for someone who can manage digital environments. Modern leadership is largely digital leadership.
That makes total sense.
Think about it. If a project hits a roadblock and the remote team's communication channel starts devolving into panic and finger pointing, the person who can step in, de-escalate the tone, demand verified information, and pivot the group back to productive friction, that person is an incredibly valuable asset.
Yeah, fostering an inclusive, verified, and respectful digital space is definitely a highly sought-after career skill. It essentially future-proofs your career.
It really does.
But setting these standards, whether in a student group or a corporate Slack, requires something deeper than just pinning a list of rules to the top of a message board.
Sure, sure.
It requires an internal compass of fairness and respect. And accountability is notoriously tough online because the screen creates distance and sometimes total anonymity. How do you maintain an internal compass when the technology itself invites you to detach from the humanity of the person on the other side?
That requires a significant paradigm shift. Ethical participation cannot be about avoiding punishment.
Right, it's not just following the rules to stay out of trouble.
No, it's not about acting good.
Mm.
Simply because you don't want to get banned by a moderator or fired by HR.
Mm.
It has to be about recognizing that responsible technology use is the foundational pillar of a healthy society.
It's realizing that the avatar you are yelling at is a complex human being with their own struggles, sitting in a room somewhere reading your words.
Yes. And beyond empathy, it's honestly about self-preservation.
How so?
Well, when you hide behind a screen to be cruel, or when you willingly distribute misinformation because it aligns with your politics, you're actively poisoning the well that you also have to drink from.
Wow. Yeah.
The digital world is the real world. The psychological damage inflicted online is real. The political instability caused by digital misinformation is real. Your actions create lasting personal and social consequences that echo into your future.
What really stood out to me in exploring this topic was the surprising connection between protecting the broader community and protecting your own mind. Like, out of all the elements of digital citizenship, digital well-being really stands out. It turns out you can't be a good digital citizen if you are fundamentally burnt out.
Oh, completely. The concept of personal digital well-being is often treated as a luxury, or maybe just a separate self-care topic, but it is deeply integrated with digital citizenship.
Tell me more about that.
Let's look at the mechanics of the attention economy. The platforms are designed to extract as much of your time and attention as possible. If you do not actively practice a form of digital minimalism, you know, setting hard boundaries, curating your feeds, taking mandatory offline breaks, you will become cognitively depleted.
Which brings us right back to those cognitive biases we talked about earlier. When I'm exhausted, doom scrolling at 2 a.m., I am infinitely more likely to leave a harsh comment or fall for a phishing scam or share an anger-inducing article without checking the facts. My defenses are just totally down.
The symbiotic relationship is undeniable. Prioritizing your digital well-being ensures that when you actually are online, your prefrontal cortex is engaged.
Right.
You have the mental bandwidth to introduce that intentional friction. You cannot serve a digital community ethically if you are utterly consumed and overwhelmed by the environment.
It's like they say on airplanes, you have to secure your own oxygen mask before assisting others.
Exactly.
So how do you actually apply this internal compass when you close your laptop today? Because vaguely hoping to be a better person online isn't really a strategy. We need a framework and the tools to enforce it.
Yes. Developing a personal digital citizenship framework is the actionable takeaway here. Think of it as drafting a personal constitution for your digital life.
A personal constitution, I love that.
It should explicitly define your communication principles, your ethical technology practices, your verification habits, and your responsible participation goals. And importantly, there are technical tools designed to help you execute this.
Okay, let's break those down, because the specific tools mentioned, Google Safety Center, Mozilla Monitor, and LinkedIn, aren't just random apps here. They serve very distinct functions in this framework. Let's start with the defensive tools. How exactly do Google Safety Center and Mozilla Monitor work to protect the citizen?
Well, they operate on the principle of transparency and data agency. Let's take Mozilla Monitor as an example. Large-scale data breaches happen constantly. A server at a fitness app or a hotel chain gets hacked, and millions of email and password combinations are dumped onto the dark web.
Which is terrifying, but also feels very out of my control.
Right. It feels out of your control until you use a tool like Mozilla Monitor. What it does is continuously scrub those dark web databases and known breach dumps. If it finds your specific credentials, say, the email you use for your university or your banking, it alerts you immediately.
Oh, that's incredibly useful.
It is. And Google Safety Center operates similarly, providing a centralized hub to audit exactly what data you're sharing, who has access to your location, and which third-party apps are quietly reading your information.
Discovering your data is out there completely shifts your mindset. It makes the abstract concept of a digital city feel incredibly real and vulnerable. And understanding that infrastructure, like how data flows, how it gets stolen, how credential stuffing works, it gives you the agency to lock it down.
You cannot be a confident participant in a society if you constantly feel unsafe or exploited. These tools restore your baseline of security.
And once that baseline is there, you can do more.
Exactly. Once your defensive perimeter is secure, you can focus on proactive, responsible participation, which is where a platform like LinkedIn comes into the framework.
LinkedIn is fascinating because it's kind of the ultimate test ground for everything we've talked about today. The mask of anonymity is entirely removed. Your resume, your employer, and your professional network are attached to every single keystroke.
Which fundamentally changes the behavioral algorithm. On many social platforms, as we discussed, the algorithm rewards toxic friction. But on LinkedIn, the professional community generally self-regulates to reward constructive engagement.
Yeah, people are on their best behavior.
Mostly, yes. It is the perfect environment to practice your communication principles.
Like, when you disagree with an industry article posted by a colleague on LinkedIn, you don't respond with a mean meme or a personal attack. You practice productive friction. You cite a source. You maintain respect.
And in doing so, you are visibly building your long-term reputation. Every interaction, every verified article you share, every thoughtful comment you leave acts as a brick in the foundation of your digital footprint.
It's all connected.
It really is. Mm. By mindfully utilizing these tools, securing your data with Mozilla and Google, and practicing ethical communication on LinkedIn, you take the theory of digital citizenship and turn it into a daily applied practice.
It's all about moving from theory to reality. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what is the ultimate goal for you navigating this interconnected city?
It's about building digital confidence. It's about developing adaptability and a deep commitment to lifelong learning in a landscape that is constantly violently changing. The platforms you use today might be obsolete in 5 years. The AI systems will grow exponentially more complex.
Everything is moving so fast.
So you aren't just memorizing a static set of rules for a specific app. You are developing a resilient mindset. A mindset that allows you to walk into any new digital environment, assess the infrastructure, protect your well-being, and participate with unshakable integrity.
We are all permanent residents leaving footprints in the digital concrete. I want to leave you with the core reflection prompt from this lesson to mull over on your own. How can I contribute positively, ethically, and responsibly to digital communities and society? Think about the urgency instinct. Think about the friction you can introduce. Think about the run on the bank and how your daily habits can either degrade or strengthen the collective trust we all rely on.
It's powerful stuff to think about.
It really is. As you move forward, we encourage you to stay curious, responsible, and future ready. Make sure to review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock these concepts in.
Highly recommend checking those out.
And we want to acknowledge the reference materials that helped shape this lesson, specifically the books Digital Minimalism, Factfulness, and Human Compatible.
Fantastic resources.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Your digital footprint is yours to shape. Make it one you are proud to stand by.